This podcast is brought to you by ARC Facilities, providing instant mobile access to facility information for on-the-go teams. To learn more about our smart building technology, visit arcfacilities.com. And now, welcome to the Facility Voices Podcast with your host, David Trask.
Hi, I'm David Trask from ARC Facilities, and this is Facility Voices, the podcast that brings you real-world FM experiences from the front lines in the field. My guest today is Andrew Eckert, Vice President, Facilities Director, Facilities Department at Tinker Federal Credit Union. Andrew, welcome.
Thanks, David. Appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. So, Andrew, tell us about you and your role at Tinker.
Yeah, so I'm the Director of Facilities at Tinker, and basically in my role, I manage kind of the things that they weren't quite sure what to do with for the credit union for some of the back of house work. So I have construction, I have facilities, procurement, insurance, or postage. If there's kind of a dotted line to facilities, it tends to run through my team. But I've got about 4 to 5 different things that we do periodically.
A lot of hats.
A lot of different hats.
A lot of hats. Well, and that's, you know, that's funny because that's kind of the mantra of facilities teams in the first place. It's which hat do I have on this second?
Yeah, that's right. They look like they could do that. Let's give it to those guys.
That's right. Yeah, the catch-all, right?
That's right.
That's right. Well, give us a little background on Tinker.
Tinker, a wonderful place to be at. Tinker's a credit union in Oklahoma. We've got 435 locations across the state, from Oklahoma City and Tulsa to Enid, Shawnee, Ada, Seminole, mostly here in the metro area. Tinker Federal Credit Union is a co-op, so it's a financial institution that, unlike a bank, we don't have a lot of the fees that you may see at a bank. We tend to have better rates for our membership, but our focus primarily is on our membership. But we're not trying to meet shareholder expectations or anything to that regard. So with that being said, I mean, it's an incredible place to do my job at, because I'm not worried about hitting some shareholder goal. I don't have budget cuts in Q3, Q4 randomly, and I get to make sure that the focus of what I do is taking care of our members and their employees. A wonderful place to be.
Focus on the people. I love that.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, you know, with your locations being spread out all over the place, tell us a little bit about your facilities team.
Yeah, I've got a great team. We actually just added a new position to the team after a business case we did to take on some new responsibilities. I've got 5 facilities maintenance technicians, and I have I've got an AVP of construction and AVP of maintenance with their respective teams. So I've got some guys that have decades of experience working for financial institutions, banks and credit unions. Most recently, brought on board a licensed plumber. And earlier this year, we brought on board a licensed electrician. So we have a very, very well-rounded group of people, a lot of different experiences, a great passion for what they do. And I'd never had that experience before in my time working facilities management. It's usually, you know, you get whoever you can, and you're proud to have that. And we've got a chance to pick our team, and boy, we've got a solid group.
That's awesome. I've been on some of your site or at some of your sites, and I know they're so spread out, and that can bring some unique challenges too, of course, because your ability to respond can take a minute in some cases. But fortunately or unfortunately, that brings up some other challenges unique for sites that are all over the place. And, you know, a lot of organizations right now are looking at adding new technologies to address that. You know, they're running lean and mean with their teams. What are you looking at, and what are some of the organizations that you've heard that are looking at making a switch? And what are some of those success factors they should consider when they're looking at switching technologies?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, that's kind of where we were talking about this earlier this year, about some of the things that we were looking for specifically. For my team, because we're spread out and we don't have the ability to respond to things as quickly as we want, we've got some priorities that we're trying to address. We're looking at smart irrigation controllers. We've got some of those in the field now. And because utility rates are on the rise and consumption is our only thing that we can really control in Oklahoma. So we're looking at things like that, adding sensors and EMS systems as well to help us to make sure that we have the monitoring. I can't have somebody on site always when I need them. We can schedule and plan the best we can, but things happen. And if I've got an hour and a half drive time, I have to be very careful about pulling the trigger on sending somewhere. So we're looking at those technologies first. You know, when we looked at what we wanted to do and where we wanted it to go, probably the most important thing that we ended up doing first and foremost is that we really set out and outline what our expectations are. What are we looking for? I thought it was really important to help define that first. What I'd seen some people do, and they fall into the trap of saying, well, let's just see what's out there. And if you look what's out there, there's a lot of great technologies out there in the field, and they can help make our jobs easier. They can also make it harder, and they can also make it more expensive. So one of the most important things that we did is we clearly articulated what our problem was, and from there, worked our way backwards on how to solve that. And sometimes you end up changing the definition of what the problem is along the way. I'll say one bit of technology that's been fun that we've been working towards is actually using some site analysis and GIS software. Probably not something I really talked about originally, but our real estate is another element that falls under my responsibilities as facilities director. We've partnered with an agency who's doing some consulting work for us and providing some software that'll help us to identify where to go by using analytics. And I'll say that process of finding who to use, we ended up changing KPIs that we use with our organization on how we measure things. So number one thing is to just kind of outline, what do you want to achieve? It's okay if you change it along the way, but you need to have an idea of what the problem is first.
I love the way you put that. And it's because you started out going down one road, but that road splintered or it evolved. And maybe it took you down different paths to get to a larger goal. I hear this all the time when I talk to folks about they're looking at different things or implementing different things. And it's amazing when they pull in different groups, how many of those other boxes get checked that they didn't have any idea until they brought in those other groups. So what's that kind of collaborative approach when you're talking about when you start going down that path, how that evolves and how involved are these other groups that you work with?
Yeah, collaboration is a very critical thing for us. I never want to operate in a silo. You know, for an organization like Tinker Federal Credit Union, I'm a support service. I've worked for organizations where facilities management is what we did. I've worked for a REIT before where, you know, we were the driving factor minus the income side of it. But for the credit union, we're a support service. I exist for other people and that's it. I know my role. I know my mission. And I'm completely on board with that. But that being said, when we started any of these paths of trying to find technological solutions, it's all about collaboration because we don't even really know some of the ways that we can help solve other problems. You know, to your point about kind of adjusting on the fly, we have partnered with an organization to help with our utility billing. And it's something that I brought to the game from a past employer that's been a fantastic thing for me. And what I wanted for it was actually just to reduce the risk of shutdowns. We've got a short turnaround to pay bills. We're not quite there as an organization to pay those quickly. So I thought, you know, if we outsource this, it might help a lot. What I found in the process was actually that they create this consolidation document for us that uploads directly into our accounting software. It's not something I was looking for, but it actually solved a huge problem for our accounting team and saved them hours each week of manually uploading these transactions on there. So that just came from having a conversation. So before we do anything, I'm asking who I even think can be in the room. Does it need to be IT? Yes, probably. Does it need to be operations? Probably. Accounting. Let's just talk. I mean, worst case scenario is we lose half an hour on a Microsoft Teams call and then people are upset about having missed lunch or something. But the worst case scenario is that we spend money on something we don't need or we start this long implementation process that doesn't benefit anybody.
I agree. And I think that collaborative process can be so fruitful. And one of the other challenges that I hear often is the blind side of things. They don't consider all the factors or they don't do their due diligence. What are some of the pitfalls that you've seen people run into when they're looking at technologies or implementing new things?
The biggest pitfall I see is probably there's a lot of great software that's out there. And I think we've all seen how predictive AI is being used in a number of ways to really enhance facilities management. And that may be great for a lot of people. For my organization, we're not quite there yet. So I think one of the pitfalls I see a lot is people kind of getting ahead of themselves in technology that's out there. A lot of times, the simplest thing may be what you need. So don't go crazy and taking on all the options or all the mods that are available on a software. Just start small. Add if you can. If you've got an adaptable platform, that's wonderful. The worst examples I've seen of this is an organization I worked for that said, you know what, you know, we have energy management systems and we have controllers, but I think we can do this better ourselves. And they had the capital, so they went out and hired a guy and they created their own hardware. They bought a Raspberry Pi device, they bought controllers, and they did all the software creation. But you know, you fast forward months and years, and they've sunk so much money into something that's a really simple thing. I mean, you need schedules, you need some contactors on your lights, you need maybe a cloud-based program you can access it, but it's not complicated. So I think that the largest pitfall I typically see is just people biting off more than they really need.
Well, I think that's fair. And homegrown systems, although they may seem attractive or feel like you own it, many of those, they're not connected to anything else, or they can't connect to anything else either.
That's right.
And that can be its own Pandora's box, so to speak, because then how do you bring, if that fails, God forbid, if that fails, then what?
You start over, right.
And do you lose all that information that you already built in this other thing? Because I think that could be as time consuming and a hindrance on your team as anything.
For sure. Absolutely.
I hear this all the time, and it always comes down to this. This is the way we've always done it. Usually it's with the legacy guys. It's the ones who have been there for a long time. And you know what? I'm not going to change because this is the way we've always done it. But that opens up its own can of worms. And what are some of those challenges you see with not changing or not even recognizing we've got to change?
Yeah, there's nothing that's going to make me go from 0 to 60 faster than hearing that phrase. This is the way we've always done it. I think part of that is that old school mentality. And people look at maintenance and say, the root word is maintain. We want to keep the status quo. And that just couldn't be further from the truth. It's frustrating to hear that, but I understand. I think one of the problems with this is the way we've always done it is that eventually your hand's going to be forced and you're going to have to upgrade. You're going to have to update for any number of reasons. Sometimes you have to update just because the platform's no longer used anymore. Or one thing I've seen a couple times now is that a work order system is being run on like Windows 95 and then all of a sudden you lose support on it. And then what? So I try to take the approach, and the thing that I preach to my team a lot about is that, you know, look, you're doing the work. You're putting in the effort in every day. So why don't we try to find creative ways to do things better? And really, we've kind of shifted that mentality of status quo to future-proofing what we do. And we try to get ahead of things. Some things in facilities maintenance are what they are. You have to paint a wall because someone puts their foot on it when they're standing up against the wall. So what's your workaround? Sometimes in paint, you can find some high quality products that are scuff proof or scuff resistance. And you paint that once and it's going to knock out 75% of what your problems are. And sometimes some things just break. But I think regardless of what category it falls into, it is very dangerous to have that mentality of just, this is the way we've always done it, right? It may be the way that we've always done it, but that doesn't mean it's the best way. It doesn't mean it's the most efficient way. It doesn't mean it's the most cost-effective way. And we've definitely tried to foster that spirit in our team of collaboration and creativity to move beyond that. It's hard, and it takes time, and it's not perfect. But you know, when you can get through that, you can do some pretty creative and amazing things.
I agree. I just talked to a guy the other day, and let's fast forward. I spoke to him the other day, but I talked to him a year prior. And he was in that same boat. This is what we've always done. This is working. Fast forward to recently when I spoke to him again, and it was like a deer in the headlights. And I said, what's going on? And he said, listen, the software that we've been using all this time that I love and I rave, it's no longer supported.
Yeah.
And yeah. I mean, when I say deer in the headlights, it was panic. And yeah. I asked him, I said, well, what are you going to do? And he goes, I don't know what to do. And I think that's even worse because he knew that something may or may not be supported down the road and just kept plowing. And now he is where he's at. And he's essentially got 6 months. And the problem with that is he's lost guys in that, or he's going to lose guys that are leaving for retirements, or they're the ones that just left because they got another job, that now he has no way to even tap into their resources and their brain. It's either leaving or it's already left.
I think it's one of the core responsibilities of a facilities manager is that we have to be aware of where we're at now.
Right.
And looking ahead to that, if we are doing our job, we're creating 1, 3, 5, 20-year capital plans. If we're doing our job well, we're doing maintenance so we don't have to do more expensive things later. Our core responsibility is to future-proof. And it's such an interesting dichotomy to hear those conversations of like, I'm just not ready to do it. I like what we have. Your job is to look ahead. This is what we do, but day in and day out.
Well, especially with how things are changing and they're so fluid today, I ask a question all the time about people, especially when I'm speaking at conferences. I'll say, raise your hand if you've got a smartphone. Everybody raises their hand and I'll ask them, can you access X, Y, or Z? And half the people or three quarters of the people put their hands down. I'm like, this is 2023. You know, it's not like me hailing a cab anymore. I look up Lyft. You know, and a car is there in 5 minutes. Come on. But I think at the end of the day, you're right. It's the successful organizations have the leaders who are looking ahead and keep their ear to the ground with what's changing, what's available, and keep their eyes open. And it may not, just by keeping your eyes open doesn't mean you're going to change tomorrow, but you're better prepared for what's available. God forbid something isn't supported and you've got to make a change. You know what your options are.
Yeah, I agree. Get ahead of the curve. Don't wait for it to happen to
you. That's right. That's exactly right. So one of the other challenges I often hear is, especially when you're in a position where you've got to look at switching or you're going to look at switching to something else, whatever that thing is, that other system that you're going to look at, whether it's forced on you or you just need to take a look, is getting buy-in. Working with leadership, the person who's got to write that check and justifying that. Talk a little bit about the relationship that you should have with leadership and what is that process and what are some of the successful things that you've seen and done in the past?
Man, I think that could be a full podcast series on facilities management and communication with leadership. Well, I've talked about this a lot with my team is that I think traditionally in my position, what's happened is you've got somebody who is a maintenance technician. They learn the technical side. And they become a supervisor and then they become kind of a manager of an area and they just kind of matriculate into leadership based off of tenure, which is fantastic. You don't want to lose that institutional knowledge. But at some point, kind of what you're insinuating, you have to take on new responsibilities that you're not really trained for. You can kind of learn budgeting as you go. And if you have a personal budget, you can take some lessons there to build a kind of a commercial, professional, corporate budget, but it's not the same thing. And the same with communication. You know, you and I talk to vendors, we talk to other business leaders, you talk to those corporate executives, and you talk to them all differently.
Right.
I think one thing that I don't see our people doing well enough is learning how to navigate those couple of different levels.
Well, it can be a minefield.
It can be a mine. There's personalities and there's different characters and characteristics you have to work through. That's absolutely true. I'll say that for my organization, I am so lucky that the timing I came in at, the leadership that exists, they are nothing but supportive of me and my department. And they have leaned on my expertise and my team's expertise to present what's right. Now, we've had to earn that. So kind of getting to your question, one of the ways that I've kind of helped build that up is that we have some natural apparatus in place already that helped me with that. So we have a monthly facilities and technology committee meeting. It's heavily technology. I have the portion of facilities that's in there and it kind of addresses both at times. But what I like to do is kind of leave a trail of breadcrumbs. If I've got something on the horizon that I'm concerned about, I'll bring it up. It's not going to be the full presentation, but I'm going to say, you know, I want the board and the executives here to be aware that we're looking into a situation right now that involves ABC. We don't have all the details right now, but I want you to be aware that it's on our radar, and I want it to be on yours, that it's something that I'm going to address in future months. And then from there, we build on it. And this is something I learned from my current boss. She's fantastic at this. You know, and then the next month, we'll come in and say, well, I've got some more details on what I talked about last month. I think we've got an opportunity here based off of, you know, some of the strategic priorities we have. And I know what you're looking for into the future. I think we can kind of mesh those together, whether or not it's through a process change, a vendor change, or technology change. What I don't like to do with getting buy-in is to just try a fear tactic or to blast somebody with it. I think that's critical to save those conversations for emergency issues, things that we need to act on immediately and get immediate decisions on. But with regards to like these big process changes or technology changes, gotta lay the groundwork out. When I've done that effectively with our leadership, they understand that it's something that I'm researching, that I'm putting a lot of thought into. I'm collaborating with other departments on. I've got other bids. I've got other vendors I've talked to. So when I finally do present my recommendation to them, they say, we understand. Let's move forward with it. We trust your recommendation on that. And that's worked well. I kind of say, in addition to that, one thing that has benefited me really well, and I learned a long time ago, and I recommend this to anybody who's new to facilities management leadership, is to just ask the question of your leadership of like, how do you want to be communicated with? Do you want a phone call if XYZ happens? Do you want an email for these situations? Do you want a business case? How do you want this information? And that way, when those situations inevitably pop up, you're prepared and you know what to do. But you got to do that ahead of time. You can't just wait until the situation happens and then say, well, I'm going to try all three. I'm going to call, text, and email and see which one nets the best results here. My father-in-law, who kind of worked in this world, used to say that he only wanted a phone call for fire, floods, or blood. And if you had one of those three categories, pick up the phone and call them. Anything outside of that, you can use your discretion to reach out to me. But man, I think teaching and communication to facilities management can help transform organizations because there's so much great benefit from these people. They don't always translate into action because of that knowledge gap there. You've got my vote on that next spinoff podcast there, David.
I appreciate that. But, well, and I think a lot of folks, they struggle with that, or they, to your earlier point, they've moved up within the organization and they've never had to walk into that room and sell the idea or talk about why or really prove the business case for why they need to do something, whether it's a technology change or a process change or anything like that. And that kind of leads me to my next question here. And that's they fall into traps. And some of those are self-made. Some of those are, I didn't know. Some of those it could be across the board. But some of those things, they can fall into those traps that torpedo their selling their internal plan or ideas. What are some of those things that you've seen that have really undercut the goal?
Well, I kind of go back to what we were just talking about. I think one of the biggest ones is poor communication. You know, I mentioned earlier about how people can communicate and how do they be more effective about it and asking leadership, what do they want to know? Within our organization, I know certain leaders want certain types of documents, how it's presented. And that's fine. I'm game for whatever needs to come across to present the argument. So I've written executive summaries, I've written business cases, and I've written even this kind of homemade Excel document that outlines things pretty clearly. But I think one of the best ways that I've seen to get information across is to be clear and concise. Get to the meat and potatoes of a problem. Because when you're addressing someone of an executive position, these are people who have a high volume of information coming at them constantly. It is information about all number of different things. So if all of a sudden somebody in the middle of their day is discussing CD rates or deposit rates that they're going to roll out to 500,000 members, and you say, I want to bring on board this new software, okay, well, I got to get in a different mindset for this. And I think one way you could do that is being straight to the point. You can give clear metrics. If you don't have metrics, because sometimes in our case, we've presented technology changes that maybe don't have metrics yet. I'll say for us, one of the modernization things that I've been working towards is bringing on board an asset management system. Well, we have a work order system. So what's the difference there? How do I pitch to a CEO that we need a whole new suite of software to manage assets versus a work order system? So I had to tailor my case around that. And it comes down to saying, listen, we've got X number of $1 million in capital assets. This is protecting those assets. So if you have metrics, use them. If you can be as straight to the point as possible, excellent. I love pictures if there's ever an opportunity for that. Sometimes it's the easiest way to get something across. Hey, I need to replace a pylon sign out front for $50,000. Fortunately, I don't get challenged on those things, but in that case, I can show a picture of what it looks like. But it's not one of those things you have to kind of walk your way through and say, all right, let me set the stage. Here's what we're looking at here. Just preach it. They'll make a decision quickly if it's something worthwhile.
And you're right. I think pictures are worth a thousand words. But I also think it's make it relatable to that person. I hear this all the time about my boss didn't understand and I'm in a hospital environment and, you know, we need to replace an AHU. The ramification, if that AHU goes down, is we lose ORs 1 through 4.
That's pretty clear.
That's a ringing endorsement, but it's also knowing the room. You know, when you walk into that meeting with that group, like you were talking about, you have a monthly meeting, you walk into that meeting and know your audience. When I'm talking to folks about softwares or different softwares that they're utilizing, I always ask, how many boxes will it check off for the next person who's sitting in that chair across from you?
Yes,
you know, because you just don't know. But I think you don't know because you don't ask. What are your needs? What are the hot topics that are hitting your desk every week? And it may not fall into the facilities category at all, but it may have something to do with, like you're talking about, the membership. This will directly impact the membership, or this will directly impact, I mean, even right down to events. I've heard that that's a big one as well. You know, events teams, when they're working on something, well, you know what? This is going to help me for X. You never know what departments you're going to be able to impact in specific ways. And I think where my next question here is going to be, when you're looking at the needs of those different departments, how do you address immediate things versus those emergency needs? And also, where does that go with your long-term needs?
That's facilities management in a nutshell, right? I mean, you can look at it from proactive or deferred maintenance, or you can look at it from the perspective of emergency versus long-term needs. What I do to kind of answer that question of how I orient labor or capital is based off of our strategic priorities. Mm-hmm. So we have a kind of a strategic plan for our organization. I orient what we do based off of that. We just actually had a big revamp of it, which is really fun. And as I head into the new year for 2024, our employee goals are shifting. So for my team, we're adding goals on our annual review process. We have goals, and at least one of those goals is going to be based off of what this strategic plan is. So if you're going to look at it from the perspective of like, what do I do now versus later, I tend to focus both of them, if I can, on what that strategic plan is. Because at the end of the day, you know, we're going to meet our tasking that we're required to do for maintenance. We're going to hustle. We're going to take care of the things that our branches need, that our back of house staff needs. But I think of it from the perspective of how do I actually meet the needs of what our board and our executive leadership came up with? And I work backwards from there.
Yeah, I can definitely appreciate that, you know, because then you're making sure you're covering all the bases for sure.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So let's narrow down to you. What are your top three success strategies for buying software, implementing software?
Great question. We've kind of touched on some of these initially. Number one, define that problem statement. What do we want to solve? For me, with our utilities, that's usually kind of where I start with. It's a category that's gone up maybe 60% over the last 3 years in Oklahoma. Yeah. It's a regulated state, but we've had some major events that have caused like fuel costs to go up. So we started with the problem statement of rising expenses. And then we started looking at what are our problem children on this one. There are irrigation costs. Do we have meters and separately meter that? If we do, great. Let's move on to the next one. What controllers do we have in place? What are our problems with managing those controllers? What are our problems with managing our systems? And then from there, it's easy to kind of figure things out from that point, as far as I'm concerned, because then we're talking to vendors. We're beating the bushes and finding out what exists out there to support what our problem statement is. I think also the thing that I keep in mind is to keep it simple. I know that there are great tools out there, but the more I talk to vendors, that it does feel like the Silicon Valley industry has migrated into the facilities management industry to some degree. So when you look at some of this cool tech out there, there's some great products out there that have a very pointed, specific, helpful use. there are other things out there that when you talk to vendors, they say, you know, here's what we do, but we can also do X, we can do Y, we can manage your lights, we can manage your faucets in the restroom, we can manage everything from the roof down to the foundation. And like, I hear you, but I really kind of need something very specific here. And from there, work your way backwards into the budget. If you have a budget that makes it easier, you can eliminate vendors that are over the top. If you have a budget, you can eliminate ancillary services because there are even softwares out there that you can add on devices. You can add on users, which increase the cost, and then pare it back accordingly. It's a slippery slope because I've been able to watch the industry kind of go from having a work order system that's on a desktop, like in a specific room. You got to go into that room and you got to log into that one computer to either access a central plant or access work order system to where I can have it on my phone. And I think that there should be somewhere in between from being able to see a camera in a hallway on my phone and then just managing my system in a cost-effective way. So having a good problem statement, managing your expectations and managing what those ancillary devices are and ancillary costs are, and then and watching your costs. It can be a very challenging process. And I will say it is a long process. It is not something you should step into and think you'll be done in a couple of weeks. So set your expectations low on the time frame.
Hey, Andrew, this has been great. I really appreciate you joining me today. And I look forward for everybody to catch us on the next episode of Facility Voices. Thank you.
Thanks, David.
Thanks for tuning into Facility Voices, a podcast that explores the big issues and challenges facing the facility management industry today. We welcome your feedback, ideas, and suggestions for topics and guests. Send an email to communications@arcfacilities.com or reach out to our host, David Trask, on LinkedIn. Facility Voices is brought to you by ARC Facilities.